If we have to run, you should know these streets.
I will, said Aaron.
Garrick grunted.
I have other things to arrange now. I'll come for you after 6th bell of dark. Be where I can find you.
He made to leave, but Aaron's voice stopped him at the doorway.
Thank you, he said gravely, for giving me this chance.
Garrick regarded him with a grim face, his eyes cold.
It's your last, he said. Tonight, you'll show me what you're made of.
The click of the latch was loud in the silence as he closed the door behind him. Aaron tried to commit the map to memory, but his thoughts were too turbulent for anything to stick. Still, he couldn't get warm. Fear had chilled him bone deep. Fear of getting caught. Fear of what would happen if he didn't get caught. Fear of being discovered afterwards. Fear of what he had to do. Finally, he could stand it no longer. He found a quill and some blank paper and wrote a quick letter, his ears straining all the time for sounds of Garrick's return. When it was complete, he folded it up and put it in his pocket, where it weighed far more than a single sheet of paper should. Do it, he told himself. His mouth was dry. He should burn the letter, forget the deal he'd made with Clisson. He didn't know how he could live with himself afterwards. He closed his eyes, saw the torture chamber again, and heard Clisson's voice. If you betray me, I will catch you, and I will take the price of your treachery out of your friend's hide. It was a threat Aaron believed absolutely, and it terrified him. But hadn't Aaron always protected Cade, even when he didn't want to be protected? I'll never leave you behind, he'd said, and he meant it. So he'd take his friend home, keep him safe from the horrors that lurked just out of sight. With Garrick gone, Cade would have to give up his childish dream of being a greycloak. They'd live in his father's house in comfort, drink ale at the Cross Keys and talk about girls, and all would be as it was, or as close as he could make it. All it would cost was one man's life. One man he hated and admired, and whom he'd just tricked into trusting him. He was dirt. He was lower than dirt. But he'd smear his soul with all the filth the world had to give if it would keep Cade from Clisson's clutches. When the coast was clear, he slipped out, heart pounding, and walked through the house as nonchalantly as he could. At the top of the stairs, he encountered Laria, who was carrying a pile of freshly laundered bedsheets. He tensed as she spotted him, sure that she could see the guilt written on him. But she paid him no mind, and he made his way downstairs. He could hear Cade's voice from the parlour, telling Fenn a story. Garrick was elsewhere. Keel, as far as he knew, was still locked in his room, where he'd retreated without a word of thanks to Aaron for saving his life, nor any clue as to the content of the letter he'd received. He slipped through the house, seeing nobody on the way, and left via a side door. He could hear Orica's lute faintly, coming from the garden. Harrod would be with her. It was a short distance from the side of the house to a row of vine-tangled trellises fixed to the outer wall. Satisfied that nobody was in sight, he climbed the trellis and went over the wall, landing on a patch of common land on the far side. The tension in his chest eased a little. He was out. With the looming shadow of the old wall behind him, a darker black against the gathering night, he made his way into the streets. The lamplighters were out, dim and furtive figures moving through the up lanes, shrouded in shadow. A cart clattered past, making Aaron jump. There was an eerie tint to the last light of day. It was a blood moon night, and Tantera held the sky alone, a black dead eye lined with burning veins. Well, Tantera's watch was a time for ill doings, and fitting for a night like this. Aaron screwed up his courage and pressed on, keeping an eye out for anyone he recognized. If he was seen, no excuse would save him. A few streets away was a Croden beer hall he remembered passing that morning. It was better appointed than most, for this was a rich district. Moneyed Crodens usually drank in their own private parlours in an endless round of soirees, but beer halls were men only, and many Crodens loved the convivial warmth of their traditional watering holes, rich or not. As in Shoal Point,
There were soldiers on the door to keep the peace, in black and white livery and polished armour. Aaron paused at the corner as the beer hall came into sight. The chill had seeped deeper into him now he was outside, and the tightness in his chest made it hard to draw a full breath. He felt like he'd been poisoned, but he'd done this to himself. Collaborator. Traitor. Turncoat. He remembered the men of the canal district holding him, pulling him up, delivering him to Hart. The watchman had come within hair's breadth of murdering him, and the Ossians had just stood and watched. He'd dreamed of being Croden most of his life, until he rejected them. He'd only just started to feel proud to be Ossian, but now he knew what that was worth too. His teachers had been right all along. He was born of weak stock. This was no heroic legend, no bard's tale of victory. The world was more complex than that. Life and death couldn't be boiled down to a few verses. A Croden boy was making his way along Aaron's side of the street, spinning a rattle in his hand. "Hail to the Emperor!" Aaron called. The boy came to a stop. "Hail to the Emperor!" he replied warily, making a closed-fist salute across his chest. Aaron took the letter from his pocket, and three decims with it. "I have a very important task for you," he said in Croden. "For the Empire. Do you understand?" The boy straightened. You could get far with a Croden by appealing to their sense of duty. "What is the task?" he asked. Aaron pressed the letter into his hand along with the coins. "Take this letter to those soldiers there. The coins are for your trouble." "That's all?" The boy sounded confused and disappointed. "That's all," said Aaron. "Now go, in the name of the Emperor." He shooed the boy away and retreated round the corner, where he waited long enough to see the boy hand the message to the soldiers. By the time the boy turned and pointed to show the soldiers who'd given him the message, he was already out of sight. "Let it be over," he thought darkly. The blood moon shone down on him as he hurried back towards Mara's house and the treachery ahead.
74. The barn behind Mara's house lay in red darkness, lit only by Tantera's baleful light spilling through the cracks in the boards and an open hatch in the loft. The air, usually dry and powdery with hay husks and mouse droppings, smelled sharp and acrid and somehow threatening. Resting at one end of the barn was an elegant cart bearing the crest of the Master Vintner of Morgenholm. Several barrels of amberline were already upon it. The rest stood on the floor next to other smaller barrels of plainer design, the Zulan delivery brought from the docks that morning. Garrick laboured in the gloom, alone, a kerchief tied around his nose and mouth to block out the alien smell which had begun to make him light-headed and dizzy. With great care, he tipped one of the Zulan barrels and poured a viscous liquid into a funnel placed in an upright amberline barrel, in a hidden hole behind the famous crest. The Zulan barrels were only two-thirds the size of the amberline casks, but they were still heavy enough to make his arms tremble. It would have been steadier and safer with two, but sharing his burden wasn't a luxury he'd permit himself. This task was his alone, as it had ever been. Once the secret compartment was full, he gently put his burden on the ground and replaced the bungs. Six done, six to go. Then he had to glue down the amberline crests to complete the illusion, before Wilhelm arrived to collect the cart and its newly prepared cargo. Later, Garrick would head to the ghetto with Aaron. It would be a busy night, a hard night. But things were moving now. Things were getting done, and he was full of febrile energy. He shook out his aching arms and was about to resume work when he heard movement at the other end of the barn, a soft sound in the poisonous dark. He lifted his head and peered into the gloom. Mara? It wasn't Mara who emerged from the shadows by the door, but Keel. Garrick hardly recognized him at first. He'd always walked tall, like he owned all he surveyed. Now he slunk into sight, shoulders slumped.
"I knew you were up to something," Keel said. As he came closer, Garrick saw his eyes were bloodshot and red. He was drunk, and he'd been crying.
Knew it. All those secret trips you were making. You never used to be secretive, not around me.
Garrick pulled the kerchief down from his face.
What are you doing here, Keel?
Came looking for you. Came to talk, eh?
He sniffed.
It reeks in here. Why are you working in the dark?
Wouldn't be wise to have a light, said Garrick.
Keel's eyes skated across the cart and the barrels arranged around Garrick's feet.
What's in the barrels?
Garrick would rather he'd never have known, but now Keel was here, there was no avoiding it.
Ellerite oil, he said.
Keel frowned, too drunk to grasp it at first.
Remember what the boys told us back in Skavengard, about when they were down in the mine? They said they saw fire in the air and heard a thunder loud enough to wake the Aspects from their slumber. I knew then what I had to do. That was when I made my plan.
He laid a hand on one of the Zulan barrels.
These barrels are full of Ellerite oil. Come near them with a flame, they'll destroy the barn and likely half of Mara's house with it.
Keel smoothed his hair back along his skull, shifting his weight from one foot to the other as his balance wavered. Slowly the seriousness of the situation dawned on him.
God spit, he breathed. How did you get it?
Osman talked about Zulan chimericists who made fire and thunder such as the boys had spoken of. I wondered if our friend Rapapet might know something. Seems Crodan engineers pump it out of Ellerite mines when they find it, and the Zulans buy it up and send it home to their chimericists, or to the Glass University for whatever they get up to there. They say the Lord Marshal of the Knights Vigilant in Mittelland has started looking into it. They're planning a new purge, did you know? The 7th. They want to use chimericist arts to crack open the underground cities and blow the Urds from their holes.
Keel came closer, staring at the barrels, half awed and half horrified.
And what do you mean to do with it?
Garrick met his gaze flatly.
I'm going to kill every high-ranking Crodan in Hammerholt.
Keel shook his head, as if trying to dislodge something in his ear that had prevented him from hearing Garrick correctly.
You're going to do what? These barrels look like amberline. If anyone tastes them, they'll find amberline inside. But they're mostly full of Ellerite oil. Once they're delivered to Hammerholt, they'll be taken to a storeroom. I'm hoping Yarin found out which. When I get inside, I'm going to find them. Sealed, they're safe enough, I reckon. But break them open, put a torch to them. Fire and thunder like you've never seen.
His eyes glittered in the faint red light.
The Prince of Crodor will be there, Keel. The heir to the Empire. The whole of the Crodan High Command in Ossia will be with him. And who knows how many barons and counts? General Dakken, the man who stole the Ember Blade.
Princess Sorrel of Harrow, Keel breathed.
No. I doubt she'll be at Hammerholt till the day before the wedding, and it'll all be over by then. But she doesn't matter. Otiko is the Emperor's only son, and the King of Harrow has only daughters. There can be no marriage if Otiko is dead, and Harrow is so bound by its own traditions that only marriage will do.
Garrick's hand became a fist.
The alliance will collapse, the Emperor's heir lost, the Crodan chain of command in Ossia thrown into chaos.
And the Ember Blade? Keel asked weakly.
I'll not see the Ember Blade in the hands of a Crodan, said Garrick. I told you that.
You told me you were going to steal it.
The Ember Blade will be heavily guarded and locked in a vault that only the Master of Keys has access to. I'll never get near it, much less get it out afterwards. Stealing it was always impossible. I mean to destroy it.
Keel leaned against the cart, as if all the strength had gone out of him. Learning of Garrick's plan hadn't filled him with excitement, as it had Mara. Instead, it seemed to have drained him. His voice was quiet.
You're not coming back, are you?
There was something final in that, something which hit Garrick in the heart. He'd known it for a long time, but to hear it said aloud so boldly drove the truth of it home. Hammerholt was the last place he'd ever see. No more grass, no more trees, no more fireside ales or sunlight, never again to be touched by a woman, or to laugh, or to hear an Ossian bard tell tales of the old time in his mother tongue.
"It takes a fire to make a fire," he said. "Someone has to carry the flame."
Keel was silent as he digested that. Finally he lowered his head in despair.
"I always knew you were a callous bastard, Garrick, but till now I had no idea of the depths of it. You're going to start a war, aren't you? You're going to start a war, and you won't even be here to see it out."
Garrick wasn't sure what he'd expected from his oldest friend, but it wasn't this. Anger flared in him. He'd just declared that he was willing to give up his life for his country. Didn't he deserve a little more than bitter disapproval?
"They're killing us by stealth," Garrick said. "The Crodans are comfortable in occupation, and we are comfortable being ruled. Bit by bit they're erasing us, until one day there'll be no difference between us and them. So we have to hurt them, really hurt them. We have to show them they can't take our land without consequences. Let the Emperor know how it feels to lose a loved one the way so many Ossians have."
"And then what? They'll stamp on Ossia in retaliation. They'll crush us. It'll be like Brunland all over again."
"Good," cried Garrick. "They'll hang people in the street in their frenzy to hunt down subversives. They'll imprison us in our villages and take away our luxuries. Families will be torn apart. Innocents will die. And then, only then, will Ossia realize it has to get up and fight."
He was suddenly furious, 30 years of coiled rage driving the words out of him.
"We outnumber them 10 to 1, for Joha's sake. Just like when the Erds had us under the yoke. They've divided us with fear and self-interest, setting countrymen against countrymen until we're so busy looking out for ourselves that there's no time to fight the real enemy. We need to show the people that their overlords aren't invincible, that they can be toppled if we all pull together. Because who's next after all the Sards are gone? We're sleepwalking into slavery and somebody has to wake us up. And that somebody has to be you."
The sneer in Keel's voice brought Garrick up short.
"I was there in your darkest days. I walked by your side when no one else would. I know who you are, even when you don't. Lie to others if you like, but not to me. Don't keep your secrets from me."
"And if I had told you, you would have tried to stop me."
"That's not the point. We're supposed to be friends."
"You wouldn't have understood. You don't understand now. I'm not starting a war. We've been at war for 30 years. Did you dream that change would come without sacrifice?"
Keel sagged, and a shadow fell across his face.
"And so Garrick will decide, alone, the fate of uncounted thousands. Perhaps you are chosen of the Aspects. Only with their approval could a man act with such arrogance."
"You're drunk," said Garrick. "Spare me your sarcasm."
"And when the war reaches Rackan Bay, what then?"
Keel drew a letter from his jerkin, holding it loosely between two fingers.
"Mariella sent me news from home," he said.
Garrick's mood darkened further. Now he knew why Keel had sought him out. Mariella had always been a thorn in his side, ever wanting, needing, demanding. For years she'd been his opponent in the tug of war for Keel's affections, always trying to pull his only true friend away from him. He hadn't known the details about the burned bear, for Keel had locked himself away upon his return, but the letter made it all plain. That was why Keel had gone to the inn. He'd told Mariella how to contact him, the Crodans had got it out of her, and they'd been waiting. She was always his weakness.
"Whatever's in there, it's a lie," he warned. "The Crodans wrote it for her. How else would they have known to ambush you there?"
Keel shook his head and tears gathered in his eyes.
"This is truth.
I know it.
Fluke is dead. The Iron Hand killed him when they went to his farm, looking for you."
It was something Garrick had half expected, but hoped never to hear. Fluke was no friend to him. He may well have sold them out, in fact. But it was hard news for Keel, all the same.
"He was the one putting food on the table for Mariella and Tad," Keel said. "The money I gave them will last the winter, perhaps, but then..."
He tailed off.
"What choice do I have, Garrick? I have to support them. It's what a man should do."
Garrick fought down a rising tide of irritation. In other times he'd have lent a sympathetic ear, but here, now, surrounded by barrels of Ellerite oil with Wilhelm on his way and dark business tonight... Keel had been singing the same song for years, ever since he'd first left Rackham Bay. Garrick knew how it pained him, but his constant indecision was galling.
"Jadrell will arrest you the moment you set foot in Rackham Bay," Garrick told him. "The note is a trap. You know it and I know it. But if you would go, Keel, here's my blessing, for I'm tired of trying to talk you out of it. Take a ship tonight. Be with your family for the few hours you'll get before they arrest you and you're hanged."
Keel swayed away from the cart, gazing at him with moist, hurt eyes.
"Am I worth so little to you? Now you can see the end. After all this time you'd send me away so easily."
At that, Garrick was overwhelmed with disgust. This puling wreck of a man wasn't the warrior brother he'd fought beside these many years, against seas and whales and the might of the Crodan Empire. Skavengard had unhinged him. Losing his family had broken him. Garrick had given up this way once. He'd been as pathetic as Keel was. Perhaps that was why it was so unbearable to witness his best friend's fall. All he wanted was to cast him away.
"What would you have me say, Keel?" he cried. "Go if you must, stay if you want, but whatever you do, trouble me no more. I have more important things to do than to coddle your feelings."
Keel flinched at his words, stung. Garrick almost hoped he'd respond with fury, the way he would have once. He shrank back instead.
"I will stay," said Keel, "at least until tomorrow night. I'll come with you to the vintner's yard and say farewell there. At least allow me that."
"Aye," said Garrick gruffly, pulling his kerchief back over his mouth. "We'll say our farewells on the morrow, then."
Keel waited, perhaps expecting something else, perhaps wanting to say more. In the end he walked away without a word, heading unsteadily for the door of the darkened barn. Garrick watched him go, his anger fading as quickly as it came. He didn't want to deal with his friend tonight, but he couldn't let him leave on such a sour note. Before Keel reached the door, he called his name again.
"I've no craft with words," Garrick said. "Never had. I lied to you, and I'm sorry for it. I'm sorry for Fluke and your family. I'm sorry for it all."
Keel lowered his head.
"I'm sorry, too."
Garrick waited till he heard the barn door close. Then he put Keel from his mind and returned to his task. There was much yet to do before he could rest. 75. In the deeps of the night, the temperature plummeted, and the first breath of winter brought a thin ground mist to the moon-reddened tangle of the ghetto. The wall built around the Sard quarter was more symbolic than secure, being only twice the height of a man and not even thick enough to merit ramparts. Aaron and Garrick were over it in moments. They dropped down to a roughly cobbled street, and at once it was as if they'd fallen from the bright living city into a silent, empty world abandoned by human life. Aaron stared at the dilapidated buildings surrounding him. Sewage, sodden and reeking, choked the open gutters. The wet, curled corpse of a dog lay nearby, rats busy about it. He'd never seen such dank and dismal squalor. Hard to imagine people had lived here a little over a week ago. It looked like it had been left to rot for years.
"Stop gawking," Garrick snapped, and led him across the street into an alleyway.
Behind the main thoroughfare was a warren of flaking brick tunnels, that wound between piled hovels where sards had once been packed, whole families to a room. Aaron saw strange graffiti in an alphabet he didn't know, which reminded him of the mark on his wrist. It was cold, but the chill in the air was nothing to the chill of treachery in his bones. His stomach ached hollowly. He'd been unable to eat at dinner. Since he'd sent his message to Clisson, his thoughts had stampeded in an endless circle. He was terrified by what he was doing. He dreaded the look in Garrick's eyes when the Crodans fell on him, the shock and disbelief as he found himself betrayed. But the alternative was worse. He remembered the torture chamber in the Iron Hands headquarters. The thought of Cade's screams gave him strength to carry on. The passageway opened into another Magdalen street, cramped and mean and dripping. Garrick stopped at the end, looked out, and then waved Aaron back into hiding. From the street ahead they heard footsteps, and a lantern brightened the mouth of the passageway. "Want one?" a voice asked in Croden. "Have I ever wanted one?" came the reply. "Thought I'd ask, nonetheless. My mother raised me polite. She wasn't so diligent in teaching you to follow regulations, though, eh? Ah, who's to see? A small reward for a miserable duty." A low chuckle was his response. "Go on, then, give me one." "Really? Cold as coffins out here tonight. Anything that'll warm me will do." Two soldiers, taking a rest from patrol. The aromatic whiff of cheroot smoke reached them. Aaron stared at Garrick's back. Cadrach of Darkwater, he thought. Garrick's true name, Clisson had told him that. It was what he'd been waiting for all this time, the key he could use to unlock the secrets he craved. "Saw you got a package today," said the first voice. "Your wife again?" "Yes," said the other man. "Five pairs of good socks. She knitted them herself. My toes sing her praises. Wish I had a woman who'd send me socks." "Socks are a poor substitute for seeing the woman I love. I haven't been back to Croda since the spring. At least you have no one to miss." "Ha! That's cold comfort, if ever I heard it. What fortune to have no one who cares about me." Aaron barely heard them. He was gathering his courage, ready to do what had to be done, what he'd told himself he must do tonight. This would be his last chance to know the whole story, to hear it from Garrick's lips before they reached Yarin's house, where the ambush waited. "You'll find someone. You're not a bad-looking fellow. Women love a uniform." "Why do you think I became a soldier?" joked the first man. "Come on, we can smoke on the hoof. Standing still's not keeping me warm, and I don't have socks like yours." Aaron and Garrick stayed hidden until the soldiers were long gone. Finally, Garrick relaxed and made ready to move again. If there was any moment to force the issue, it was now, but when it came to it, Aaron feared the answers he might get. Would he be better keeping his illusions, leaving his father's memory undisturbed? And yet, he couldn't let this opportunity pass. He couldn't. "Cadrach of Darkwater," he blurted in that dark tunnel in the ghetto. There was something in Garrick's stillness that was terrifying. "Where did you hear that name?" he said, his low voice carrying the words like a threat. "Keel told me," Aaron lied. "He thought I deserved to know." "Did he now?" Garrick's tone was deadly. Then, suddenly, he changed the subject. "The patrol is gone. We've got business yet." He slipped up the alleyway and into the street. Aaron hurried after him. Rats scurried towards the gutters, lit red by the maddened eye of Tantera. As they reached the far side of the street, Aaron caught Garrick up and grabbed him by the arm. "You owe me, Garrick," he said through gritted teeth. "My father died because of you. I loved him, and he's gone, and however it happens, some of that falls on you. Keel told me who you are, but he wouldn't speak of my father. I would hear that tale from you." Garrick's eyes blazed. He looked up and down the street. The patrol was gone, but they were still dangerously exposed. "God spit, boy, you pick your times. We'll talk after." "It's Aaron, not boy," Garrick held his gaze. Something in the way Aaron said it impressed him, apparently, for there was a decision made in his eyes.
"Aye. Perhaps it is a tale you ought to hear before it's too late to tell it. You know my shame, then. No reason to keep the rest from you. But you'll hear nothing if we're caught, so get moving."
Garrick led him along the street until they found a way into the back alleys and passageways on the other side. Aaron was excited and afraid all at once. His bluff had worked. Garrick assumed that if Aaron knew his name, he knew the whole tale. But what was this shame he spoke of? And what story would he tell of his father? After so long wondering, he was suddenly aware he might have best left this stone unturned.
"Your father's name was Eckhard when I met him,"
Garrick told him quietly as they hurried through the narrow ways.
"Eckhard the Quick. I'd never seen anyone so fast with a blade, and never since, till I saw that dreadnought at the gates of Skavengard."
Aaron felt a hole opening up inside him. Eckhard the Quick. His father's true name, given him at last. The syllables landed on him like stones. His whole life, he'd never even known his father's name.
"When he came to us, he was young and full of fire," Garrick went on. "Drunk on his own skill, getting into fights he shouldn't. He needed a direction. He'd have destroyed himself elsewise. But Kessia found him, recognized his qualities, brought him into the fold. Would that she had not. The world might be a very different place."
Aaron brimmed with questions. Who was us? Who was Kessia? He forced himself to keep silent. Interrupting would display his ignorance.
"I was new then too, and of similar age," Garrick said.
They reached a junction where broken pipes dripped foulness and rags hung from a windowsill. After a moment of indecision, he picked a direction.
"We became friends first, then close as brothers. Perhaps I should have been the first to see the signs, but I loved him too well. He was a man who changed his skin to suit his surroundings. When he joined us, he threw off his old life, forgetting everyone he knew, and he never looked back. I took that for devotion, but I was wrong. He adopted the role and became it. It never crossed my mind that he might change again as fast and as completely."
It was strange to hear his father spoken of that way. Aaron had never conceived of him as a person with wants and needs, only as a parent, a myth of a man. He didn't recognize the chameleonic figure that Garrick described.
"We all swore an oath to fight until death for the Ember Blade," Garrick said. "But to Eckhard, they were just words."
Aaron came to a halt as he realized what Garrick had just said, braked by the shock of it. Garrick, noticing that he was no longer following, turned and frowned at him down the shadowed brick tunnel.
"Keep moving. We don't have much..."
"My father was a Dawn Warden," Aaron blurted. Garrick was puzzled.
"Of course," he said. "Surely you had guessed that, since you knew that I was also a..."
He trailed off, and a grudging respect crept onto his face.
"I see," he said. "Well played, Aaron."
Aaron could hardly believe his ears. "You were both... But I thought... There have been no Dawn Wardens in Ossia for centuries."
"Not since the days of King Garam Hawkeye. But it takes more than the word of a king to break a Dawn Warden's oath. They were outlawed and forgotten by the people, which was how they liked it. They operated as a secret society after that, working behind the scenes for the good of Ossia, rooting out conspiracies, spying on other lands, doing the things our kings and queens couldn't. When they did it best, our rulers didn't even know they were being helped. That's how it was when I joined them."
He looked around a corner and went on. Aaron followed, reeling from this new information. "Garrick is a Dawn Warden." It was impossible to square that thought with the brutal, bitter man who'd once beaten him to a pulp on a mountainside. The Dawn Wardens were the stuff of legends. "Were the Dawn Wardens great heroes, then?" Sora had asked him once, on the night of the Ghost Tide when he was a boy flush with love. Yes, he'd replied. They were great heroes, back when we had any. And here was one before him. A man Aaron could never decide whether to despise or admire, a sour and grim-faced warrior with ready fists and a scornful tongue. A man who'd saved them from soldiers and dreadnights, who'd seen them through cursed Skavengard and faced down a servant of the Outsiders. A man who'd kept them one step ahead of the Iron Hand while devising a daring plan to infiltrate a heavily guarded fortress so he could single-handedly retrieve the Ember Blade.
"We saw the invasion coming," said Garrick, his voice so low that Aaron was forced to keep close to hear him. "But Queen Alessandra was too fond of making peace to rush to war, and the lords and ladies were too concerned with their own squabbles to listen to our warnings. Still, the speed of it came as a surprise. We barely got the Ember Blade away in time."
"I thought the Ember Blade was lost when Queen Alessandra was taken."
"Aye, that's the story. Truth is, we stole it away before the Crodans could lay hands on it. We took it to a secret keep in the forest, planning to use it to rally the country. We'd lost Morgenholm, but the Crodans didn't have the West, and the Rainlands were still free. The nobles were slow to react, but they were mustering. Losing the Queen had rocked them, but we always were a country fond of changing our royalty. For some, it was the best chance at the crown they'd ever have. Whoever took up the Ember Blade would have united the country, I know it. They'd have fought back. They might even have won."
Aaron could hear his voice darkening, filling with hatred.
"Your father had other ideas."
Aaron saw his hand flexing on the pommel of his sword as he went on.
"If you ever see the Hollow Man, you run. You run and you don't stop, for he's come to kill you." "The Crodans promised we would be well treated if we surrendered. The nobility would keep their lands and wealth. If they resisted, they'd be executed, and the common folk would be enslaved. We all knew what Brunland was like when the Crodans were finished with it. Your father argued for surrender. He said the Crodan armies were too strong, too well organized, and we were unprepared. He was shouted down, humiliated by the others. We had taken an oath to keep the Ember Blade in Ossian hands. Surrendering it was out of the question. He left angry. He was convinced surrender was the right thing for Ossia. If we fought back, he believed it would be a..." He trailed off as they rounded a corner, and his gaze fell on what lay beyond. Bloodbath. 3 dozen corpses lay there in the red moonlight, maybe 4. It was hard to make numbers from that multitude of limbs and torsos. The mannequin faces of the dead stared out from the slumped pile of greying flesh. Those whose lips and eyes hadn't been eaten by rats were puffy and swollen, cheeks bloated with blood that had pooled there after their hearts stopped pushing it. They'd been slain and left naked in a heap at the corner of this tiny tumble-down square crisscrossed with washing lines. Merciful shadow hid the worst of it, but Aaron could still see pinpricks of green shining amid the horror. The dead eyes of the sards, still gleaming unnaturally bright even in death.
"Reckon they didn't go as quietly as the Crodans hoped," Garrick rumbled. "Or they tried to hide, and failed."
"But..." Aaron couldn't find the words. "They just left them out here. Like animals."
"Aye. Our beloved overlords behave less admirably when there's no one else to see. But you knew that already."
Aaron had no response to that. The inhumanity of such slaughter, the indignity of it, took away his breath. The flies were at rest now, but no doubt the maggots were at work, and the rats scampered and gnawed restlessly. The stench made him sick. Then his eyes narrowed and his heart jumped. He leaned forward to see. There, in the shadow among the dead, that face. He knew that face. Ethan. Panic bloomed in his breast. How could the boy be here? Had the Crodans found him? Had he been dragged to Morgenholm and killed? He ran to the bodies, rats scattering at his feet, his arm across his mouth.
Where he thought he'd seen Ethan was an elderly man instead. Had it been over there, then? Hard to tell in the tangle of corpses. He cast about desperately. He'd seen him. He knew it, that wild hair, that dirty face.
"What's got into you?" Garrick said, dragging him back. "There's no time for this."
"I saw someone. A boy I knew."
"You saw nobody," Garrick said, "and better not to find them if you did. You've already proved more trouble than you're worth tonight. Keep your mind on the job."
Aaron, still unable to find anyone who looked even vaguely like Ethan among the hellish mass, let himself be drawn away. As he went, he looked down at his wrist and the curling symbol there. Sard, friend. He'd been marked by that boy, claimed by him. Perhaps his mind had merely conjured him from the frightful dark. Sard, friend. He was anything but. There was only one man he knew who could hurt the people that committed this atrocity, and Aaron meant to betray him.
"What did he do?" Aaron said, pulling free of Garrick's grip.
"Tell me now, before we go further. What did my father do?" Garrick cursed, torn between the desire to spit up the rest of his tale and the desire to keep moving. But Aaron wouldn't let him go now. He'd hear the end of it in this dripping, blood-fouled yard behind the squalid ghetto tenements witnessed by the dead.
"Very well," Garrick said at last. "For both our sakes, you'll know it all. One night, your father came to me in my rooms in the keep. He was fevered with nerves and wanted me to go hunting with him right then, in the dark. I refused. It was a ruse to get me away, and I knew it. Then he told me what he'd done. The others couldn't see past their oath, he said. They'd damn Ossia to slavery. So he'd taken matters into his own hands, made contact with a young Crodan captain named Dakin, and told him where the Ember Blade was. They'd be upon us at any moment. As my friend, he wanted to spare me." Aaron had sensed it was coming, but it still felt like a punch in the gut.
"My father. My father gave up the Ember Blade." Garrick didn't seem to hear him. His eyes were far away, his jaw tight as he spoke.
"He thought I'd see it his way. I didn't. I should have run him through on the spot. But my first thought was to warn the others, to save the Ember Blade. I cursed his name, shoved him aside and made for the door, but, well, there was a reason they called him Eckard the Quick."
He lifted his chin, showing Aaron the horrific scar running across his bearded throat.
"This is your father's mark," he said, his phlegmy voice low with loathing. "He drew his blade across my throat from behind."
Aaron shrank from the sight. Now at last it made sense why Garrick hated him so. And gods, Aaron didn't blame him. Didn't blame him at all.
"He did that?" Aaron asked weakly.
"Aye, he did. Left me bleeding out on the cellar floor. But your father was a swordsman, not a footpad. Didn't know how to do it right. A lot of muscle in the neck. You need to really saw to get through it. He cut my throat, but not deep enough. I tied a cloth round my neck to staunch the blood as best I could, then went to warn the others or to get help. I don't know. I blacked out, I reckon, maybe more than once. Doesn't matter. By the time I got downstairs, the Crodans were already there."
He glared into the middle distance as he spoke, struggling to keep the pain of the memory in check.
"I heard the others being slaughtered. Dawn Wardens are worth 5 Crodan soldiers, but we're no Dreadnights. They had numbers far beyond ours and surprise on their side. I couldn't fight, could barely stand. All that was left was escape. So I staggered out into the woods, and when I could go no further, I fell. That's where I thought it would end."
He took a shuddering breath. Aaron was shocked to see how his tale racked him. "He survived. That's what's killing him. That's why he couldn't speak of my father. Because if I knew the truth of that, he'd have to tell me all of this. that he was a Dawn Warden, that he failed in his duty, that he lived while the others died. When Garrick had steadied himself, he spoke again.
I woke in the care of a druidess. She found me, healed me, brought me back from the brink. She said the aspects still had a task for me, and they were not willing to let me go just yet. When I was healed, she sent me back into the world again. His troubled brow eased as he remembered her. Her name was Agali Sings the Dark.
He lowered his head then, and shadow covered his face.
Your father changed his name and hid, took on a new life paid for with Ossian freedom and Crodan riches. No doubt he heard that I'd survived and knew I'd swear to kill him. But I never found him, and he'd put the Ember Blade far beyond my reach. I did what I could to fight for Ossia, as the Dawn Warden's oath compelled me. Then I got word that the Ember Blade was coming back and was to be placed in a Crodan hand. That set me on the course that brought us both here.
He raised his head and squared his shoulders, and Aaron thought he looked taller somehow.
So now you know, Aaron, who I am and who your father was.
So now I know. The man he'd loved and worshipped was also a cutthroat and a coward, who'd given up Ossia's greatest treasure and tried to murder his best friend. It sounded impossible, and yet there was no lie in Garrick's voice, and it made sense of everything where there had been no sense before.
"Answers will come in their own time," Vika had told him once, "and when they do, you may wish you'd never asked."
"You see now why I kept it from you?" Garrick asked.
"I do," he said. "And why you despise me. You see my father in me."
"More than you know," said Garrick, "the good and the bad, for I loved him well before I hated him utterly."
"I was never highborn," Aaron said. His mouth tasted like ashes. "All I had was given me by the Crodans for what my father did to you." He looked up at Garrick with amazement dawning on his face. "And yet after all that, you still came to my aid when I was in danger."
I swore an oath. I keep my promises.
As simple as that, as if it hadn't been torment. And the other Dawn Wardens? Did any of the others...
I am the last of them, he said. For more than 1,000 years they have guarded Ossia and kept watch over the Ember Blade, but they will die with me. Perhaps it is for the best. Too long the people of this land have relied on others to fight their battles. They wait for heroes to save them when they ought to be saving themselves.
No, Aaron cried, louder than he'd intended. Garrick made an irate gesture to hush him. No, Aaron said again, more quietly but with no less force. This land needs heroes. It took Jessa Wolfsheart to lead the uprising against the Urds. Our people have the will to fight, I know they do, but they need someone to show them how. If we had the Ember Blade, if you had it... Aaron trailed off as he realized what he was saying. Garrick's eyes were dark beneath his brows, his gaze penetrating.
Aye, well, he said at length. There's a long road to if, and we still have business tonight. Enough talk. Yarin's house is just down the way.
With one last glance at the pile of bodies, Garrick slipped out of the square and down another alleyway. Aaron almost reached out to stop him, but he hesitated and the chance was gone. He followed instead, plunging back into the tight brick passageways where Tantera's nightmarish light only penetrated at slanted angles. Garrick was moving at speed now, and Aaron could barely keep up. Stop him. Take it back. Tell him. But he couldn't. To do so would cost him Cade. Even his best friend would shun him when he knew what he'd done. Aaron would be cast out at the very least if he wasn't killed by Garrick in his rage. He'd lose it all. All he had to do was nothing. So much easier to do nothing than something. And then he and Cade would be free, and all would be as it had been. Except that Garrick would be caught and tortured and killed.
the last Dawn Warden of Ossia, Vika's champion, shown to her in a vision by the servants of the Aspects themselves. Garrick was a hero, maybe Ossia's only hero. Blinded by his anger and resentment, he hadn't seen it till now. So what did that make Aaron?
"Down this way," said Garrick, disappearing into a gap between buildings.
He paused outside a narrow wooden door, hardly visible in one of the walls.
"That's Yaren's place."
Aaron's chest tightened. There was no more time to deliberate. The Iron Hand were beyond that door. Garrick had survived one act of treachery, but he wouldn't survive this one. It would take two generations of betrayal to lay him low. "Like father, like son." Garrick put his hand to the door.
"Stop him."
His throat had closed up. He couldn't bring the words of warning to his mouth, couldn't condemn himself to that disgrace, that pain. Quietly, Garrick turned the handle. The door wasn't locked.
"Stop him."
He dared not. It would mean the ruin of him.
"Stop him."
"Are you ready?"
Garrick asked, and he pushed the door. Aaron's hand clamped around his forearm. The door stopped moving, a finger's width from the jamb. Aaron was white-faced and sweating, but his eyes were steely.
"Close the door,"
he whispered. Slowly, Garrick closed the door, slowly released the handle. Never once did he break Aaron's gaze. When he spoke, his voice was a wolf's growl.
"What's in there, boy?"
Aaron let him go and swallowed down the urge to be sick.
"Crodans,"
he said. It was all he could manage. Garrick loomed over him in the dark, filling the passageway. His eyes were cold as coal in the red shadow, his hand on the hilt of his dagger.
"You made a deal,"
he said. It took every ounce of Aaron's willpower not to turn and run for his life.
"They caught me," he said. "I had to. I did it for Cade. I didn't want anyone else to be hurt."
But they were weak excuses, and he knew it. He lowered his gaze.
"I made a deal."
"Small wonder you were so eager to come with me tonight. Fool that I am, I told you exactly where we were going. Were I to step through that door, I'd find a dozen iron guardsmen with crossbows ready, is that it?"
I suppose."
"Then perhaps they'll find you a better target,"
Garrick snarled. With that, he seized Aaron by the front of his jacket, pulled open the door and shoved him into the dark room beyond. Aaron stumbled inside with a shocked cry, his arms reflexively thrown up in front of his face, instincts screaming in expectation of the volley of bolts punching into his torso. But he only staggered to a halt, and nothing struck him. When he lowered his arms, the room was empty, but for a few pieces of furniture tipped on their sides against the wall. He stared in bewilderment.
"In 30 years I've seen a lot of traitors and turncoats, boy,"
said Garrick from the doorway.
"You're not half as subtle as you think."
"You knew?"
Aaron gasped.
"Suspected. Enough not to credit your sudden desire for atonement this evening. I thought it wise to give you a false address for Yaren's place. Had you memorized the map as I told you, you'd have known we were nowhere near the spot I pointed to."
He stepped into the room, pulling his dagger from its sheath, and closed the door behind him.
"It's just you and me now. I knew you'd show your true colours sooner or later, Aaron, son of Eckard."
Aaron's eyes went to the blade in Garrick's hand. Every fibre of his body urged him to flee or draw steel to defend himself. He did neither. He'd dreamed of being a man of honour, but he'd shamed himself instead. For all his airs, he was a wretch lower than grub. The least he could do was face his end like a man. Wild with fear though he was, he lifted his chin and put his arms down by his sides. Garrick approached until they were face to face, the dagger point between them.
"Well," said Garrick, "there's courage in you after all."
I was wrong, said Aaron.
He was trying not to cry, but tears gathered anyway, the final humiliation.
As my father was wrong before me, I didn't understand. Please keep Cade safe. He had no part in this.
A handful of heartbeats passed, each one an agony, until Aaron could have screamed for the thrust to end it. Then Garrick seized his left hand and drew the blade across it in one quick searing stroke. Aaron hissed with pain, staring in confusion as a line of blood welled in his palm. Garrick slowly, deliberately, drew the dagger across his own left palm, then sheathed it.
"In 30 years I've seen a lot of traitors and turncoats," Garrick said again. "And I've seen a lot of people make mistakes and make up for them. You were tempted, but at the last you stayed strong. You could have let me step through that door, but you didn't. That's who you are, Aaron. You're a better man than your father was, and I reckon you won't make a mistake like that again."
He clapped his bloodied hand into Aaron's and gripped it there.
"Swear to me," he said fiercely. "Swear you'll fight for Ossia for the rest of your days, that you'll never rest till this land is free. Swear as I give your life back to you. Swear that you will give it for Ossia when the time comes. Swear."
Tears rolled down Aaron's cheeks. At last he recognized the purpose he was meant for. The pain of his stinging hand was nothing in the white heat of that.
"I swear," he whispered. "I swear it."
Garrick clasped his other hand round the nape of Aaron's neck and pulled him into a rough embrace. Aaron clutched him and sobbed, and Garrick held him like a father as all the spite and hate and anger came tumbling out of him, carried on scalding tears. When his crying had calmed, he felt emptied and pathetic, raw and new.
"Reckon the others don't need to hear about any of this, do you?" Garrick said. "Wouldn't serve our cause any."
Aaron nodded mutely. Garrick let him go, and he stepped away, wiping his nose with the back of his hand.
"Well then," said Garrick, gruff again, "let's get to it."
Aaron followed him up a creaking set of stairs, walking in a haze of unreality and disbelief. He'd believed Garrick would kill him. Instead, he found acceptance. He understood in some dim way that Garrick's loathing of him had been waning since he beat him on the slopes of the Ostenburgs, but he'd never expected this. Garrick had tested him. Had he failed, he would have been slain. But Garrick would rather have his loyalty than his blood. And Aaron was bound to the cause now, by ties which no promise from the Iron Hand could break.
"This is the man I was about to betray," he thought.
They came to a tiny bedroom. Garrick pulled aside a wooden pallet bed and searched the floor beneath. With a grunt of satisfaction, he found a loose board and lifted it. From the hole beneath, he drew out a large tin, which he opened with his thumbs and looked inside. Aaron saw his shoulders slacken, but whether it was relief or disappointment he couldn't tell.
"Is it there?" Aaron asked from the doorway, his voice still thick with the memory of tears.
Garrick turned to him with the face of a man who'd stumbled upon treasure beyond his wildest dreams.
"It's all here," he said.
He put his hand into the tin, turning over papers.
"Plans, schedules."
He tugged out a ring of keys and held it up in amazement.
"God spit, Yaren. You did it."
He gathered the papers together, shut the tin, and slipped it in his pack. When he got to his feet, there was fire in his eyes.
"That's the final piece, Aaron. We need nothing else. Before the sun has risen thrice more, we will deal the Crodans such a blow that the bards will sing of it till the death of days. Back to the others, quickly. There are preparations to be made."
He strode to the doorway, where Aaron was standing, and stopped before him.
"Are you with me, Aaron?"
Aaron straightened, firmed with fresh conviction. No more uncertainty, no more questioning. He knew his answer now.
"Yes," he said.
I'm with you.
76. When Aaron woke, the sun was already bright beyond the curtains. He'd slept late, having gone to bed at dawn, and he lay there for a while, his eyes tracing the pattern on the curtains, thinking of nothing. His mind was at ease, more so than it had been for a very long time. Today he knew exactly who he was. He turned in his bed, soft sheets rustling, and found that a cold breakfast of ham and hard-boiled eggs, pastries and fruit had been left for him on a side table. The sight of it made him ravenous, and he wolfed it down before heading to the door to seek Garrick out. He had to know if the change he felt was real, if the oath he'd sworn last night meant as much to Garrick as it did to him. He found him with Mara in her study, poring over the plans they'd obtained last night. The door was open, and Aaron could hear them as he approached. "Incredible," Mara was saying. "They've only just begun to explore what's down there. Look, that's where they broke through."
"It was the Erd's seat of power in the First Empire, their greatest fortress."
"I know that, Garrick," she said testily. "And the new one was built on its foundations, but Erds build underground more than they do over it. I'd give anything for a map of that."
"There's an engineer's diagram here. Is that what you're looking for?"
"No, that's a cave system. It comes off a mountain lake, I think. Maybe how they get their water in? But look at the mark. This must be 200 years old. How did Yaren obtain all this?"
"Perhaps one day you'll get the chance to ask him."
Garrick saw Aaron in the doorway and beckoned him in.
"Come and see," he said. "It's only right, as you had a hand in finding them."
Aaron glowed with pleasure. Where before he'd found secrecy, now he was included. He saw the slightest look of puzzlement in Mara's eyes, but she said nothing. The amount of information was bewildering. He saw timetables, accounts ledgers, and strange diagrams which Mara explained were floor plans. Some were original documents, some laboriously hand-copied, others little more than scrawled notes. It was a muddle to Aaron, but Mara had made some sense of it. She only had to read something once to remember it verbatim, and Aaron marvelled at her ability to connect the details in her mind. Having studied the papers, she knew when and where feasts were to be held, and who was attending, and what was to be served. She knew the schedules of cleaning staff, and the names of the various valets, butlers, and mistresses who ran each division of the complex network of staff. Crodans were notorious organisers, and for an event as important as a royal wedding, everything had been planned out on paper far in advance.
"This is where the cart will be unloaded once we enter the keep," said Garrick, pointing to a courtyard inside the main wall. "The barrels of amberline will be taken to a storeroom. We suspect it will be this one near the kitchens and just below the feasting halls, where it will be convenient to serve the prince. But even with all the information we have, some things are far from certain."
"Why do you care where the wine is going? Where is the ember blade?" Aaron asked impatiently. "Every detail is important, Aaron," said Mara.
"I'll slip out in servant's livery during the unloading," Garrick said. He pointed to a room on another map. "Then I'll head to the vault and the ember blade."
"So how will you get there?" Aaron asked. He didn't fully understand how the floor plans fitted together, but he knew enough to realize that there were many chambers and levels between the vault and the courtyard.
"That's what we're working out," said Mara. "Come back later, and it may be we have an answer for you."
Aaron took the hint. His curiosity was slowing them down, and it was best not to outstay his welcome, when welcome had come so rarely till now. He thanked them both and headed downstairs looking for Cade. Last night, in the ghetto, Overwatchman Clisson and his men had lain in wait for a fugitive who never arrived. At some point Clisson must have realized that his gamble hadn't paid off, that the boy he'd released wasn't going to bring him Garrick. He'd have been made to look foolish in front of his men, and he'd be murderously angry. Aaron took no satisfaction in humiliating the man. He'd made a mortal and powerful enemy last night, who'd show no more mercy or compromise to him, or to any of the others. Clisson wouldn't rest until he had his revenge. "If you betray me, I will catch you, and I will take the price of your treachery out of your friend's hide." There were many reasons he'd made that deal with Clisson, but foremost among them was Cade. His desire to save their friendship, to save him, had almost caused him to make a tragic mistake. This time, he was determined to do it the right way. Aaron found him out in the garden, sitting with Fenn in one of its many nooks, whittling. Orica's voice drifted up through the autumnal trees as Aaron made his way towards them. "Said the king, for this heresy I'll see you burn. I say destiny's charge is not easy to turn." But the seer shook his head. "Sire, you have much to learn, for the Erds said the same in their day. Now the king stands at his window and watches the sea, and he knows that his castle's no sanctuary, as he waits for the truth of the seer's prophecy and the storm that will sweep him away." Occupied with their work, they didn't see him approach. Cade made a noise of frustration as he hacked at the piece of wood in his hands. Fenn looked over at it and stifled a laugh. "I thought you were a carpenter's son."
I am. And never has an apple fallen further from the tree, I reckon."
"Apparently not," she said, amused. Aaron couldn't help a pang of jealousy at the easy way they had with each other. Cade looked up and saw him.
"Oi, Aaron, come see what I made."
Aaron took the puzzling lump of wood. He looked at it from all sides.
"Is it a horse?" he asked.
"It's a she-warg," Cade said, "like the one we hunted that time."
"Oh, a wild pig then."
"It was a wild pig," Fenn cried, turning to Cade. "You told me it was a she-warg."
"It was a big wild pig," Cade said sheepishly.
Aaron smiled, but their casual joviality felt forced.
"Cade, will you talk with me?"
Cade had that half-joking smirk on his face he got when he was nervous.
"That sounds serious."
Fenn slid off the bench and picked up her bow.
"I should practice. I'm getting rusty."
Aaron gave her a grateful look as she slipped away. Cade shuffled awkwardly in his seat.
"So?"
"So," said Aaron. It was always hard to start these things. "I had a close call yesterday. Really close."
"Aye," said Cade. "You said. You only just gave that watchman the slip. Sounded pretty hairy."
"It was," said Aaron, though that wasn't the close call he was talking about. "And it got me thinking about what we said in the market. If I'd died jumping off that building or been killed by a watchman, well, I wouldn't like that to have been the way we left it."
Cade nodded.
"I've been thinking the same," he said. For once he wasn't making a joke of it, which Aaron was grateful for. "After we escaped the camp at Sulla's Bluff, I thought we had the whole world in front of us. We could go somewhere, make a new start. But then we got caught up in Garrick's cause, and I wasn't sure if I wanted that. But I did want to know about my father, so I stayed, and then I thoought we might be able to go back to Shoal Point, so it really could be like it was, but..."
He trailed off as he saw the bewildered expression on Cade's face and realized he was rambling.
"What do you want?" he said at last.
Cade looked surprised.
"Can't remember the last time you asked me that."
Aaron felt a pang of shame.
"I'm sorry, Cade. I always called all the shots, didn't I? Sometimes it's hard to shake off old habits. But we're not children anymore."
"Reckon we ain't," Cade said.
He seemed thoughtful for a moment, then raised his head and said firmly,
"I want to see this out. That's what I want. I want to be part of something. These people are our friends now. Aspects, forgive me, I'm even getting fond of Grub for all that he smells like a donkey's arse."
"You know what that means, though," Aaron said. "You know the Iron Hand will be after us every step of the way, and if they catch us, they'll do worse than kill us. Have you thought about that? Really thought about it? Because this isn't one of your tales where you know the hero will win because they're the hero. There's a good chance we'll all end up like Osman."
"I've thought about it," said Cade. "Thought about it a lot."
"The Doesn't it scare you?
Of course it scares me. But the idea of ending up back in Shoal Point scares me worse. People like Garrick are fighting for something true. Even if I were an actor like I dreamed, I'd just be telling stories other people wrote down. Here, we're writing our own.
Aaron couldn't help a smile at that. Cade was only ever this eloquent when he'd rehearsed it in his head. He had been thinking about it then, and he made this choice with open eyes. That was all Aaron needed to know.
I should have listened to you from the start, he said.
Now you realise, said Cade with a grin. Things are changing, aren't they? Like you said. But that doesn't have to be a bad thing. Maybe things will be better.
He was frustrated at how clumsy it sounded when spoken aloud. Why was it so difficult to put feelings into words?
All we have to do is stick together. You and me.
Oi, said Cade. He was rummaging for words himself, as awkward as Aaron when it came to making up.
What I said in the market about Fen, that ain't fair. Shouldn't have done that.
It's all well. You love her.
It ain't that simple, though. I don't know if I do.
Aaron had reached across the gap between them, and now Cade was eager to reach back.
You don't say it, but I know what you think. I get caught up in a girl and throw myself at her, like with Astra and Perla before her and Chenny and...
He saw the smile growing on Aaron's face.
I know I'm a hopeless case. And how many of them did I kiss? Not a one, he shrugged. I was jealous of you and Sora. Didn't even like her much, and I was still jealous. Maybe I just wanted a girl to be mine for once. Reckon sometimes I get tired of being the funny one.
People like you, Cade. You don't need to try so hard.
Ain't so easy to shake old habits, though, is it?
Aaron had to give him that.
Point is, said Cade, point is, if you like Fen too, well, may the best man win, that sort of thing.
Aaron laughed.
She's not a prize to be won, Cade. I'm not sure she likes either of us as anything more than friends. If she does, I reckon she'll tell us. You know what I mean, though.
I do, and I'm grateful to you for saying it. But listen, it's you and me, all right? First and always. Let's not allow a girl to get in the way of that.
They clasped forearms and shook, and that was an end to it.
Aaron felt the happy relief of resolution. Apologies started hard, but more often than not they turned out to be easier than expected. A thought occurred to Aaron then.
Wait, did you ever write to your darn ma to let them know you're safe?
Cade looked guilty.
Never had the chance. Suppose I could have posted from Rack and Bay, but, you know, me and letters.
Want to do it now? I'll help you write it, and maybe Mara can post it.
What if the Iron Hand are still watching Shoal Point, though? I mean, they might see the letter.
So? They'll only know it came from Morganholm, and I'm pretty sure they know we're here already. In fact, he was certain of it.
Come on, you can tell your da you've joined the Greycloaks if you like.
There's no such thing as the Greycloaks.
Your da doesn't know that.
A smile spread across Cade's face as he considered it.
Aye, why not? It ain't like it matters. I mean, we're never going back, are we? Not till the Crodans are gone.
No. We're never going back. Only forward.
Cade slapped him on the arm. And in that moment, it all felt just as it ever had.
Ha! Well then, let's go and write that letter.
77. To our great venture, said Mara, glass held high, and to freedom. They all raised their glasses to that, and Aaron and Cade cheered. Mara sat down and they fell back to eating, except for Grubb, who'd never stopped. Tonight was for celebration, and they ate and drank as if their victory was already assured. Tonight they were seeing off two of their own, one to go to glory and one to go home. Mara's dining room was spotless, grand and 30 years out of date. There were none of the stern, clean Crodan lines here. The curtains were heavy and rich, the walls hung with tapestries and papered with busy designs.
A fire burned in an oversized inglenook hearth, and the tableware was a mismatched mix of wood, stone, glass, and pottery. It was a thoroughly Ossian room, frozen in time on the eve of the country's fall to the Crodans. Aaron, wine warmed and full, leaned back contentedly and surveyed the table. Fenn was poking fun at Grubb, with Cade egging her on. Mara, usually cool and stately, looked excited. Orica and Harrod sat side by side, Harrod eating with precise formality, Orica laughing and joking with everyone around her. Even Keel appeared to be in good spirits, quieter than usual, but more like himself. His choice made, Keel had found some peace. Garrick was across the table from Aaron, the man he now knew as Cadrach of Darkwater, the last Dawn Warden. He was drinking little, for he still had work ahead. The revelations about his father had given Aaron a lot to think about, but where Garrick was concerned, he'd forgiven all. The wrongs visited on Aaron felt petty compared to the wrongs Garrick had suffered, and yet he'd still risked everything to save the son of his mortal enemy, all because he'd made a promise. Would Aaron have done the same in his shoes? He didn't know. But he wanted to be the kind of man who would. "A moment, if you please," Harrod called. "Milady has something to say." "A song!" cried Cade, as Orica rose from her chair. His cheeks and nose were red with wine. Grubb groaned. "If Grubb hear that song about whatever it's about one more time, he going to stab himself in the eye with his fork." "Not a song," Orica said, smiling at them both. "Though you may be out of luck if you want to silence me, my Skarl friend. Neither my song nor I are going anywhere." Grubb, who was back to gnawing on a ham-bone, raised his lip and snarled at her like a dog. "Strange fortune brought us together, yes?" said Orica, addressing them all. "But the ragged mummer's ways are often strange. My people are being taken from this land, and none know where or why. I cannot learn any more without help, nor can I turn my back on what is happening here. We do not know what you intend, but we know we must see the Crodans thrown from Ossia, if there's to be any hope of helping my people. Your cause has become ours, and so we humbly ask, will you have us?" "Aye," Cade cried excitedly, then wilted as he realized it probably wasn't his place to decide. "Well, that's my vote, anyhow." Mara was on her feet again. "I believe our over-enthusiastic friend speaks for us all. There is much work ahead, and we have need of stout hearts and strong minds, sharp wits and sharp swords. You are welcome." The others cheered and thumped the table, except Grubb. Even Keel clapped. Orica bowed with a flourish. Then Harrod got up and gave a considerably stiffer bow of his own.
"Nobody cheered for Grubb when Grubb joined," Grubb grumbled, rolling his eyes. "Don't reckon anyone actually asked you to," Cade said. "Oh," said Grubb, brightening. "Well, that explain it then."
At last they were all seated again, and Aaron smiled at Orica across the table. She smiled back, and her eyes went to his wrist, where Ethan had left his mark. "Sard friend," it said, and so he was.
"My father used to tell me, after every greeting comes a goodbye," said Keel. He'd drunk a lot, though he wasn't yet drunk. He never did take much joy in life. "I'm not one for farewells, but we've seen too much together for me to leave without a word."
He gathered himself. It wasn't easy for him to speak like this.
"My family needs me," he said. "I have to do right by them, and that means leaving you behind. I'll see Garrick to his destination tonight, and after that I'll be sailing on the morning tide to Rackham Bay. I won't be coming back." "One last journey," said Garrick. "We'll end it side by side as we began."
Keel nodded gravely and drained his glass. They offered their condolences and support, and the conversation gradually moved on. The one thing they couldn't talk about was Garrick's mission, for even though Harrod and Orica were with them now, it was too soon to trust them with everything. They'd know it all in a few days, when Garrick returned with the Ember Blade. So Garrick would go to Hammerholt alone, and it was Garrick's name that would be sung in years to come. Once that thought had enraged Arryn, but no more. The battle ahead would be long, and there would be many opportunities to distinguish himself. He'd have to earn his glory. This was Garrick's tale, not his. The door to the drawing room opened, and Larrea hurried in to whisper in Mara's ear. Her urgency alerted them all, and they looked to Mara for the news. "Peace," she said, as she saw their worried faces. "It is nothing ill. Quite the contrary, actually. It seems your druidess friend is awake." There was a moment of shocked delight. Then, with a screech of chairs, Arryn, Cade, Fenn, and Garrick hurried out of the room. Grubb, who'd demolished his meal already, reached across to scrape the remains from Aaron's plate onto his own. 78. Arryn and Cade burst into Vika's room to find her sitting up in bed, ruffling the fur at Ruck's throat, looking thinner than before, but otherwise entirely well. Arryn cried out with joy at the sight. Only now did he realize how keenly he'd missed her. They rushed over to hug her, and she laughed in surprise while Ruck whirled about the bed, barking. Finally, the hound jumped up on the bed and shoved her muzzle into the circle of their embrace, so as not to be left out. "I would have come back earlier if I'd known I'd get such a welcome." "We're just glad you're back at all," said Arryn. The uncertainty of her condition had worn on them these past weeks. Osmond's death was still fresh in their minds, and losing Vika would have been harder still. Her return now felt like a good omen. Fenn had arrived and was standing just inside the doorway, with Garrick behind her, a rare smile on his lips. "And how are you all?" Vika asked them. She looked from Arryn to Garrick, and in that uncanny way she had, she knew something had changed. "Much has happened, I see."
"You'll hear it all in time, no doubt," Garrick said. "But we're all well, more or less."
"It's good to see you, Vika," Cade said, and squeezed her hand again, until Ruck licked his cheek and he let her go, flailing at his face with a groan of disgust. "She's just being affectionate," Vika told him.
"I wish her affection didn't come with so much dribble." Cade wiped his cheek on his sleeve.
Fenn approached the bed awkwardly. "I made this for you while we were on the ship." She held out an expertly carved wooden figure, the size of a thumb. It was a likeness of Sala, the red-eyed child, with her hood far back on her bald head. Even at that small scale, Fenn had managed to capture the menacing stare of the Lady of Worms.
"I asked her to spare you many times," Fenn said, embarrassed.
Vika smiled as she took the figure with both hands.
"And so she did, for Sarla brings mercy as well as death, and sometimes both together."
She nodded to Fenn. "My thanks. I will wear it among my charms to remind me."
Fenn blushed and stepped away. "You spoke in strange tongues while you slept," Garrick told her. "Where have you been in your dreams?"
"Where have I been?"